Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And today I am discussing the issue of housing shock. We've discussed a lot about investment funds, investors, real estate investors, vulture funds. And this podcast really is about the future of this city, of Dublin City, of Galway, of Limerick, of Waterford. It's about the future of our country. It's about what type of homes we have and we're going to provide to the generations coming, the generations who need homes now. Home and housing, as you listeners well know, is a fundamental necessity that we've talked about, that I've highlighted. And the question is, are we going to lock our citizens into permanent rental penury and slavery to the investor funds? Or are we going to ensure that they have affordable, decent standard homes in sustainable communities? Now, often people say to me, and there's a lot of discussion about the sense of powerlessness about changing the housing crisis and taking action on it. People ask, what can they do? And the planning process that we have is a very important place where citizens can have their say. It's a key part of our democracy and influence the development of housing. And before I start, we often hear we want to challenge the ideas that if you are in any way opposing or questioning development, that somehow you're a NIMBY against development. I am not against housing supply. I am pro housing development. I have fervently and vociferously argued for the building and refurbishment of tens of thousands, indeed hundreds of thousands of homes in this country, and I've been arguing for it for years. But these homes have to be properly designed. They have to be of decent quality, and they have to be environmentally sustainable. What is the point in building micro apartments that no one can afford, that locks a generation out of the possibility of buying their own home, that could become the tenements of the 21st century? Where is the potential for community in developments that have no opportunity for people to buy, the majority of whom are studio units or one-bedroom units? Where will the families live? Where will the communities be built from? On Monday, I sent a tweet that called on people to take action on the housing crisis. It stated, here is something you could practically do to end the housing crisis. The US vulture fund Hines plans a massive build-to-rent development in Drumcondra, 1,614 units, none of which will be for sale. Stop these tenements of the 21st century. Submit an observation to Onboard Panola by Thursday at 5:30. But the next day, I received an email from Hines. And they said they were writing to me to request that I immediately remove the highly damaging and false description of Hines as a vulture fund from the link in the tweet below and any other relevant tweets I had issued containing the same descriptor. They went on to say this is a libelous claim that is damaging our company's good name and reputation, should be removed as a matter of urgency, otherwise they'll be forced to reserve our rights in this regard. So I've deleted the tweet. Maybe if I didn't have children, young kids, maybe I consider challenging them and taking that risk of entering a court process on the semantics of being a vulture fund or not. But I can't take that financial risk. I'm annoyed and frustrated that Hines, a global real estate investment fund with $160 billion worth of assets, has attempted to silence my criticism of them. It's worrying and dangerous for a democracy, for global finance to target individuals like this. And I really do think it has implications for our democracy, our civil liberties and our civil rights. Investor funds taking over our most basic necessity of housing can silence criticism in this way and target individuals like this. And just to make a point, the definition of a vulture fund is an investment fund which invests in assets whose prices have been severely depressed in the market. Now, Hines bought land from NAMA in 2014. They didn't build on it, but sold it on in 2019 to another US investor. There are, we know, developments of high-end build-to-rent and bought by institutional property investors in Dublin where units have been left vacant in order to keep rents high. There are thousands of empty units in Dublin. And this, of course, is integral to how real estate investment funds operate. They allow vacancy to keep rents high. They will churn and evict and turn over tenants to get higher rents in. They don't see housing as a home. They see it as an asset, as a commodity. And so this is a dangerous form of supply. Now, the reason we have to take action and challenge the developments like the build-to-rent development in Drumcondra being done by Hines is because our government has utterly failed to protect citizens from investor funds. They have done the opposite. They've unleashed them upon us, giving them ongoing tax breaks, reducing the planning guidelines. The recent measures on stamp duty excluded apartments because the government believes in these real estate equity firms. They have become dependent on them. They are captured by them. So when government fails to act to protect its citizens, citizens have to act themselves. And it's left to us. So I will be making a submission of opposition to On Board Panola to the proposed build-to-rent development in Drumcondra by the US property fund Hines. You can also make a submission in opposition. It has to be done by Thursday, which is tomorrow at 5:30. And that is an important time frame. So the time frame is short, but you can do it. So before 5:30 on Thursday. I'm not going to be silenced. That's why I'm going to make a submission. I know I'll be criticized for opposing housing development, but I think it's important to make the point. This is not a sustainable development socially, for a city, for communities. This is not the type of supply we need. And we only have to look to Berlin in Germany, where they're actually proposing a referendum that would buy back all these private the development from private investment funds who've continued to push up the rent. It would be better if this development did not go ahead. And if we had homes built on it of a decent size, a decent standard that people could buy, that could rent affordably, that you would have a living community. So I wrote an article recently for the Irish Examiner, which looked at this whole question specifically of the investment funds, the build-to-rent developments, and what was the problem with them. And I think at the fundamental point is that renters should have the right to an affordable, secure, and decent standard home. But instead, government policy has turned generation rent into a revenue-generating asset for institutional property investors who are otherwise known as cuckoo funds or vulture funds. And there's lots of other terms you have given them, which I asked you to do. If people had any ideas on Twitter, I asked, had people any ideas for alternative names to describe them? So I'll read some of those out at the end of the podcast and from Instagram as well. Now, there are thousands of build-to-rent units been developed in this country, and they are at a lower standards than traditional housing, apartments, even recent apartments. They're smaller. And we know the problem with small units. They don't. People can't live in them. And I was looking at the CSO statistics and I found that the average floor area of apartments has fallen by almost a third since 2015. The average size of apartments receiving planning permission in 2015 was 95 square meters, but has fallen to 75 square meters in 2020. The units are getting smaller. The build-to-rent institutional property investor fund model is a very dangerous road. These investment funds are not delivering housing as a home, but it's an income-generating asset for their shareholders. Their business model is based on maximizing profits by lowering standards, constantly rising rents at the highest rent possible, and the displacement and turnover of tenants. US investor fund Kennedy Wilson is advertising properties in Cork for $3,300 for a three-bedroom apartment. How are renters supposed to live, or pay the basic costs of living, especially with children and childcare, to save for the future or save for a deposit? U.S. real estate investor fund Hines is applying for planning for an entire build-to-rent development of 1,614 apartments, which I referred to in my tweet, in Drumcondra. And of these apartments, 1,043, that's 1,043 of the 1,614, that is 70% of them, will be either a one-bedroom or a studio unit. There's no opportunity for people to buy any of these units. The developments represent a housing dystopia, devoid of stable community. They will become the tenements of the 21st century. Is this the future for generation rent? Hines is also developing thousands more of these in Cherrywood and Dublin 8. Government policy is also turning social housing into an attractive asset for these investment funds. The government's forthcoming Housing for All plan, if it is actually to represent a real change, must set out how it's going to halt the devouring of Irish housing by institutional investment funds. The plan must provide a clear shift away from the current policy, which is enticing and subsidising the institutional investors through favourable planning, tax and social housing leasing measures. Investor funds, like Hines, have a war chest of billions targeted at Irish housing, and they will continue to buy up thousands of homes and build unaffordable, unlivable rental units unless the government reverses its policies. The build-to-rent legislation should be amended to include 50% of units being available for purchase and an increase to standard apartment and unit sizes. The stamp duty measures should include apartments, and the real estate funds should be served a hefty tax on the rent of profits. The fundamental question must be asked, who is the Housing All plan being made for? Is it for the institutional investors and developers, or for generation rent? We need to challenge the idea that property should be a place for making huge returns on investment. Housing, a fundamental social right, must no longer be treated as a profit-making commodity. To provide homes for generation rent and to ensure living, thriving, integrated and diverse communities for Ireland of the future, we need the supply of genuinely affordable homes to buy and to rent. And let's be clear, institutional property funds are not going to provide this. I'm delighted on Reboot Republic to be joined today by two architects who are leading the campaign to oppose the development by Hines in Drumcondra, and have produced some really important information that you can check out. And we're going to show how you can explain to you how you can put an objection into an observation to On Board Pleanála in relation to the development in Drumcondra, which unfortunately has to be done, as I said, by Thursday, which is tomorrow at 5:30. So the time is tight on this, but there is time to do it. So I'm delighted to be joined by Rob Curley and Alfonso Bonilla, who are both architects. Rob holds a master's degree in architecture from UCD and also studied at the University of British Columbia. He has previously worked for award-winning practices, including RKD Architects, and he's experienced in a variety of residential and commercial products, while Alfonso is the first Mexican national to become a registered architect in Ireland and has previously worked for award-winning practices in Ireland, Mexico, and Canada. And he collaborated on the development of a very interesting thing called the Wood Innovation Design Center, which was the then world's tallest all-timber building. But before I talk to Alfonso and Rob, I just want to say that myself and Tony set up this Reboot Republic podcast in order to be a space to name and challenge inequalities and injustices, and to explain and highlight the very real alternatives that exist, from housing to health to environment to poverty. And today's podcast will show, and I know you see it, how important it is to have this podcast and to bring these voices forward to hear and discuss these issues. So please support us. Go to patreon.com/tortoisetrack. Sign up for as little as $2.50 a month and help us to keep producing these important and impactful podcasts. Thank you. Rob and Alfonso, thanks so much for joining me on Reboot Republic today.
Thank you, Rory, for having us. It's very exciting to be here, and thank you for reaching out.
Yeah, very much appreciate it. And we're excited to be here and to talk about this. It's the right time to talk about it.
It sure is. Time is tight. We're coming up to 24 hours away from close of submissions. Maybe you could just start by explaining that. I suppose, Rob, maybe, I don't know, in terms of, you know, what you've set out, you've a leaflet that you've promoted. You also have a website set up called Stop Holy Cross College, stop.holycross.college. Why? What's your objection to Hines' development, proposed development in Drumcondra?
The first thing we can start with is that this development is, it is built to rent. It's virtually 100% built to rent, and it is a strategic housing development. Just to talk about how it's a strategic housing development, this means that it's not going through the normal planning route where it would go through Dublin City Council. Instead, it goes to On Board Planála, and at the end of their decision, the only right of appeal is through judicial review. So there's a sort of democratic deficit there. Now, putting that aside, the issue with the scheme that I see and that we've focused on is that this is 100% built to rent. It's 1,614 units. Nothing will be offered for sale to the general public. What does that mean, it's built to rent? That means that there's no
Well, if I can just say, just jump in quickly. So basically, built to rent is a very new model. So simply put, built to rent means it is purpose-built rental housing. This is a real estate model where an investor buys a number of houses or apartments within a neighborhood with the intention of renting them out and having them professionally managed. So built to rent began as an opportunity for investors to capitalize on rising housing costs, because effectively not everybody can afford to get a mortgage or do things like this. So they came up with this idea that this was a solution for the rental stock shortage. And the key word here is stock, because as investments, they are described as defensive asset classes. And that just means that they are resilient, they have low volatility, and they are considered counter-cyclical stocks. So what does that mean? That means that their value rises during economic downturns, and they underperform during periods of economic expansion. It's very simple. They're treating housing as stocks, as if we were in Wall Street.
And in the Irish context, built to rent came into this country in 2018, and it was essentially introduced through the amended national guidelines for apartments, the design standards for new apartments. There was two specific pieces of, legislation, let's call it, within that document, which is the strategic, it's SPP or 7, SPP or 8. And what those did was they basically said, built to rent is going to have its own special rules. And what are they? There's no restriction on dwelling mix. Nationally, we have standards for how many studios, how many one beds, how many two beds, how many three beds should you have in a scheme. Dublin City Council, in fact, has their own. Dublin City Council would generally say a scheme is 55% two beds. It's a minimum of 15% three beds. And then that means you can have the remainder, 35 to 45, say, in studios or one beds. That doesn't exist with built to rent. So in this case, the developer has opted to go for 70% studios and one beds. And that has a very real impact on the design of these apartment buildings and on the design of the actual apartments themselves. Because if you have more smaller units, you're going to have more single aspect units. You're going to have fewer family size units. And I know that there will be people that say, oh, well, you're being ageist or you're being discriminatory because young people want to rent these units. That's what they're for. This is a new neighborhood. Neighborhoods have mixed communities. You can't have a mixed community of different ages and classes where everything is only to rent and everything is shoebox size. When you look at the plans of this scheme, it looks like a poorly designed student housing. And what's really important is, from the outside, this has been, a lot of money has gone in to make this look very shiny and very polished. But when you look at the plans and you look at the actual apartments that are in this scheme, this is terrible design.
So speaking of exactly about like why their design is important, there's this concept called asset urbanism. And effectively what this means is that, our built environment is being treated first and foremost as an investment vehicle. So that means that our built environment is actually changing both in its physical form and its social life. And that's what Rob is saying about how the apartments actually change how the building looks and behaves. With long corridors and small units, you actually can retrofit that to get better apartments out of that. Once the corridors and the lifts and the stairs are located and built, you can't just shimmy them around to make the apartments more generous in the future. Yes, you might be able to knock walls together and make bigger apartments out of two or three studio units, but that is effectively planned obsolescence. And then, so we're talking about how a developer now is telling us that, oh, don't worry, we're planning for these units to become effectively joined into a three-bedroom if you get three units. So, you know, if you're saying that the developer is planning to give us pre-obsolete units, then we're talking about something that is effectively defective by, you know, by design. Now, the concept of asset urbanism was introduced by associate professor from University of British Columbia, Matthew Soles. So he effectively talks about how these, like, you know, institutional investors, this giant pool of money, the non-vulture funds of the world that are basically existing simply to cater and creating buildings simply to cater to a swelling number of wealthy investors, instead of being solutions to community housing and amenity needs, or even to the housing shortage in the wider and national context.
I think there's a huge amount in this, and I think first of all to commend you and thank you guys for actually taking the initiative and standing up and actually putting out, you know, how people can, you know, oppose this and why it's important, because there's a very, very strong narrative, and, you know, in my, you know, where I've been, you know, highlighting and challenging the investment funds and, you know, the government's rules on these and their complete backing of them, there's been this massive kind of we could call it straight up, like, it's the free marketeers, the center and far right. Anyway, we won't go into that space, but they're absolutely you know, saying that, oh, you know, you're stopping this supply and we need this supply of housing. And, you know, it's how would you kind of counter that argument that say, well, you know, we, by opposing this, are blocking much needed supply?
Well, first of all, the one of the main reasons why we're in this is because we were both, you know, students, graduate architects with, like, graduate architect salaries, you know, and all these kind of things. We know how much, you know, a salary in the architecture world is. We know the general salaries of the working class. And we know that these kind of schemes are very difficult to actually be afforded by average salaries. That's the reality. We know that the majority of our friends are renting or looking to buy houses and how difficult it is becoming for them. Obviously, there's a lot of news about, you know, homes being purchased for higher prices than normal. And, you know, this is obviously part of that. And now when people say that we are trying to stop development and we're, you know, NIMBYs on steroids or whatever it is that they're saying, the reality is that they're missing the opportunity to actually aspire to better designed apartments, whether they are studios, whether they are one beds or two beds. Like, the point of this is that we need to appeal for better design, for better houses, for more affordable living situations and built environments.
And on that topic of design, I think it's important to clarify that we're not saying, oh, you know, I would have put the window over there, I don't like that style. This isn't about style. This is about how homes have become a commodity. And the fact that they've become a commodity means the design of those homes has become poor. As so we're talking about low quality design with high price at the same time. So we've people out there saying that, oh, you're blocking this housing. We've come to a situation now where the government has basically incentivized a race to the bottom. And at a certain point, people need to say, hang on now. Okay, you're going to build 1,600 apartments. You're building an entire new neighborhood. You're building, like, the biggest extension or the biggest development in this area in a century. And you're saying some foreign and institutional fund, some overseas investment fund, is going to own that entire thing in perpetuity. And everyone who rents there will be renting off them. Nobody's going to be able to buy a home here. Do we not question that scheme? Do we not question the fundamental flaw? And I think that's it, is that this scheme from the outside, it's very polished. It looks like it could be a nice neighborhood. And when you start to peel back and you look at the detail of it, you'll find out that it's sort of a dystopian nightmare version of housing. It's this corporatist future that somebody needs to stand back and say, is this what we want for our city? Do we want our cities and our communities to become these privatized, corporate, you know, owned, institutionally owned environments where effectively we have an absentee landlord somewhere else that, you know, owns this entire piece of the city? Not only are they refusing to sell a single apartment, but they won't offer any of the land to go into the control of Dublin City Council. So you're winding up with this entirely privatized space that is detached from the neighborhood. So during all this debate, and it's not debate, I think we've gotten to such a situation with the housing, like the fact that housing has not been built, that we've almost forgotten to ask about the quality of what is now being built. And there's a lot of people that will, I suppose, question you for questioning that. But if, you know, make an observation, if it has no merit, it has no merit. That's...
Well, I think in many ways, a lot of people say that if we scare away these like mega investors, you know, all of a sudden we're going to return to a mega crisis of housing. The crisis exists. There is no scaring away investors. The reality about the attractiveness of Ireland as a place of investment doesn't lie on the tax incentives for non-vulture funds. It actually relies on the quality of the city and the quality of the people and the talent of the people who are working here, in the skills that Ireland develops in its citizens. And in reality, the value and the value of Ireland as a place for investment is 100% not aligned with a tax incentive from the current government. So,
And I think it's very clear, you know, the public reaction to the, you know, the purchase by the non-vulture fund of housing in Maynooth, you know, was, you know, it was massive. You know, the public response to, you know, that then required the government to make these interventions around the stamp duty, which, you know, were meaningless because they didn't include apartments. And were actually meaningless in terms of the having any impact on the profits of developer of in investment funds and non-vulture funds. But the thing was very clear to me that the public are absolutely behind the idea that land in this country and development should be providing homes for people, not investment assets and commodities for these vulture funds. Sorry, should I say non-vulture funds? But the point you're making is that, I think it's a fundamental point, that you can say, okay, now we're producing, you know, 25,000, there's 25,000 units delivered next year, supply has gone up, but you have to question what type of supply. We have to challenge this idea that all supply is good supply. No, it's not. These 1,600 units going to be built in Drumcondra, as you've said, by Hines, represent a potential dystopia. You are absolutely right when you think about it and go, you know, what are we doing? We're locking families out. We're locking the elderly out. We're locking generation rent out of the potential to own their own home. We're also locking out, and what people and, you know, Orla Hegarty and others highlight this, and Mel Reynolds have highlighted this, that when you allow land to be developed as intensively as this and for such profit to be made from it, that then you have any land that's available, the funds and investment that aim to do that with the land are the ones who can buy it. So essentially you make land completely unaffordable for any other type of development than this build-to-rent development. So if Hines gets this, it further opens the door for more international capital to come in and go, oh, look what we can do in Ireland. Look how we can turn this land into absolute, you know, huge wealth-producing commodities, and they outbid everybody. And then you get no affordable housing produced.
That is the fundamental part of this, is that the speculation that's led to, you know, the speculation that means Hines owns this and the price that they've paid for it is on the basis that they're going to do something at this scale. And what that means is that these apartments, even though they are small and they're high rent, they are going to be very expensive to build because of the nature of the building that they're going to do. They're opting to build, what is it, an 18-story tower, and whatever about one's personal opinions on, you know, tall buildings, that has a very, very specific cost, you know, effect on the units. The Part 5 social housing units that are being offered to Dublin City Council are coming in at €300,000 for a 400-square-foot studio and €490,000 for a two-bedroom apartment. That's something like an 800-square-foot or 70... In fact, sorry, it's not an 800-square-foot because it's a smaller three-person two-bedroom apartment, which is specifically used for social housing. So if you're building a normal apartment scheme, this is even a, you know, substandard size apartment. And the city council is basically saying, yeah, we're going to fork over €500,000 for that. And what happens when, or if this goes ahead and the city doesn't have that. There's two social housing blocks. They're purposely segregated from the other blocks. And this was mentioned at an open day hosted by Hines, that the segregation, and I'm sure they don't use that term, but the decision not to pepper pot the social housing units among the other units, which is ideal for social cohesion, was specifically, they decided not to do that because it is more, it's preferable for an investor or an institutional fund to buy a scheme where they don't have social housing units. So by putting all the social housing units in separate blocks, it makes the scheme more marketable. So that this is the direct effect on the quality and livability of our housing and our communities is being dictated by, well, how marketable is this on global fund markets or, you know.
Yeah, like, for example, as architects, we are, you know, when we go to university as architects, we spend many, many years being heavily criticized for designs that we come up with. We, you know, they tell you, you need to build, you know, you need to design a house for, you know, three people or whatever. You go off and you design a house, you make models, you make drawings, plans, sections, elevations, renderings, whatever. Then you present them. And you know what happens? They're usually heavily criticized. They might tell you, what is this design that you're coming up with? People can't live here. So I would actually put it out to most architects to actually look at the plans, look at the drawings, look at the conditions that the architects are offering for these designs, and ask yourselves, would you think that these developments, these designs, would pass a review in an architecture school environment? They absolutely wouldn't. But what would be likely to happen is that you would show up to review with these designs, and they would, in no kind words, tell you to consider changing careers. These are not homes that are designed for long-term living. These are not generous designs. And part of our job as architects is to question design, is to make sure that we are progressing in the livability and the quality of the work that we are building out there. If we have less generous design, if we have less apartments that are designed so that people can actually enjoy their lives, where are you going to put all your books? Where are you going to put all your life as a person? You are an individual, and yeah, maybe you want a studio to live your life. Where are you going to put your life in that studio? You have to go from the door through your bed and then to get to your LKD, the living kitchen dining combo. And that's actually not conducive for somebody who can be, you know, who can aspire to a long-term life in a neighborhood. This is just for a little bit. And although, yeah, we do need some apartments where you only want to stay there temporarily, sure, that's fine. It doesn't have to be 70% of an entire new neighborhood. It's completely inappropriate. Like, basically, our job as architects is one thing. And what we're doing right now is trying to get informed with all of legislation, what build-to-rent means for living standards, and actually try to question it. We're not here to play, here's my development strategy versus as David McWilliams puts them, financial astrologists or economists. Like, we are just trying to make sure that the voice of architects, young and old, are also heard in this debate, because the reality is that we are trained to design better. Yes, our clients might be super wealthy developers, but we are trained to help guide them to make better investments. There isn't, like, we're not against profitability. We are ourselves, we own a company, but we believe that there needs to be ethical profitability. And that comes from, you know, having a moral standpoint when it comes to your own designs. Whatever you end up putting out there and becomes built becomes part of your legacy. And architecture can never be detached from the politics and its social, political, historical context.
And I think part of the key point there is that as architects, we are able to see the direct impact of legislation. I saw, and lots of people saw, what happened in 2018 when the government, then Housing Minister Owen Murphy, I'm not sure what he's doing now, he might be somewhere in the caucuses, I don't know, essentially said, okay, we've torn up the previous standards, here's the new ones, and here's a bunch of other things you can do. Do you want to do co-living? That's now gone. Do you want to do build to rent? That's what everyone's doing instead. When I said race to the bottom earlier on, that's really what this is all about. It's about the fact standards changed, and what happened overnight, many schemes that could have been built earlier and that would have been built by now, they stopped. They were paused. And the developers or others said, hang on now, look at these standards. We can squeeze more. These were schemes that were going ahead. They were going to be built. And instead it was said, no, hang on now. If we add in an extra few studios there, we only have to do half single aspect now. Hey, we've got four cores here. Now we only need two. So all the apartments can share. We can have up to over 20, sorry, it's for regular apartments, it's 12. 12 apartments can share a corridor now. So your standard new apartment Dublin scheme in Dublin has now become a hotel type typology. Build to rent. There is no maximum. The maximum of 12 apartments per floor or per core does not apply. So in this particular scheme that Hines are pushing, there's one building where there's 15 or 16 apartments accessed off one shared corridor. Like we can see that this is not best practice. We know that this can lead to antisocial behavior. If you have a small core where I know maybe there's two or three other apartments on this floor, or maybe even five or six, you're much more likely to know your neighbor. You're much more likely to knock in. If you arrive at your floor and you've got this, you know, corridor from The Shining, I don't think you're going to be knocking on everyone's door looking for a cup of sugar. And that's not, I'm using that anecdotally.
Yeah.
But there's research that backs this up.
Yeah. And it's interesting, I think, that whole notion, which you're so right, that it has been absent in the debate, which is that the quality, the livability of what we're building, and not just in terms of, you're absolutely right, the internal space, but then there's a space of that as you walk out your door, as you say, are you in, you know, what is there, your neighbors, and then there's a whole community, there's green space. And, we should be learning from the pandemic that space is absolutely essential. And for our mental health, we know the impact now, housing, your housing conditions, massive impacts on your mental health as well, that we should be designing homes, for livability, not for profit maximization. And instrumentization as assets, that you're absolutely right. And, I think policymakers are so naive about this. And in some ways, I think they just don't care, which is that, from the outset, what you described as this asset urbanism, which, I have analyzed and others would, call financialization, this process through which, housing land, formerly treated as home, a social good, is converted into an asset traded on global markets and treated as that. Not provided as a home, provided as an asset. How do we maximize? And so, the international research shows, the academic research shows, the strategies of underbuilt to rent and these investment funds and these non-vulture funds is a thing called tenant churn. If the tenants aren't paying enough, they kick them out and get in higher paying tenants. They will refurbish in 5 years' time to then be able to up the rents again. They will, and obviously there's no caps on new rents, which is a problem as well. They will set at the highest rent possible. And we know from Killian Woods and others doing great, journalism around this, they're leaving them vacant then if they're not getting enough rent. That their strategy is to maximize the rent out of the unit and not actually provide sustainable homes. And I think it's a very, very dangerous model. And it is time. And I think the government has absolutely failed in its responsibility and obligation to the country and to the people to stop this type of development. And obviously they've done the complete opposite. They've encouraged it. But in terms of actually standing up, so it is left to citizens like you and us to stand up. And this is what we have to do. And it's not ideal to having to be trying to do this and the work it requires and the abuse that's thrown at you. But we do have no choice. This is the future of our country. This is the future of our city. And you're right, it is a race to the bottom. And this is, there's thousands of these units in the pipeline, many, many more. And I think the question is the future development of cities in Ireland going to be just built to rent, or is it actually going to be something else? And in order to stop that and actually have affordable homes and sustainable communities, I think we need to ensure that these type of developments like is proposed in Drumcondra are actually have a mix of units to buy, are of a decent quality and decent standard of size, and are designed for communities. And so listen, in terms of what people can do, what can they do to make an observation then?
Okay. First of all, we think that it's very important for as many people as possible to participate. What they need to do is write an observation to Ambor Planola, Now, at this point, because it's Wednesday at 2 p.m., we wouldn't recommend to send it by post. So either drop it in by hand or submit it online. So what you effectively need to do, we've put together a little leaflet with all the information that is required to get that. Let me just pull it up here on the computer. So basically, how can you submit an observation? First, you need to be... You need to go to the Amor Planola website, which is online.planola.ie/en-ie/housing/observation. You can also just Google Amor Planola SHD observation, and it'll send you to strategic housing development observations. Then you have to write it down. So you actually, Amor Planola has a list there of all the things that you need to do to make sure that it's done right, but I'm going to run through it as quickly as possible. It costs 20 euro. You need to ensure that your observation is valid by putting in your name and postal address, so air code as opposed to your email. Make sure that you include the address of the project that you're putting observation for, or the case reference. In this particular project, for the Holy Cross College project, the case reference is TA29N.310860. The address for this scheme is Land at Holy Cross College, Clonliffe Road, Dublin 3, and Drumcondra Lower, Drumcondra, Dublin 9. So you need to include your reasons and arguments, specifically planning grounds. In the leaflet that we've shared with you and others, we've put in quite a bit of that information, and your submission needs to be either dropped off or sent by post to Amor Planola, which is 64 Marlborough Street, Rotunda, Dublin 1, or submitted online. Like I said, because this development is actually so large, there is an option to request an oral hearing. That has an additional cost of 50 euro, which would make your total cost of a submission be 70 euro if you choose to do an observation and a request for an oral hearing. Just to make sure that people know, the decisions on SHDs are final and cannot be appealed except through judicial review. So it's not like if you don't agree with the council's decision, you can then say, well, I'm going to appeal the decision. You have to actually put a bunch of money together and get into judicial review. I want to bring something up that Heinz has put into their reasoning behind the 70% studio and one bed, which is the demographics in the area. They're claiming that a lot of people in the area are single home occupancy residents. So that means, you know, single persons in big houses. And with the government, or with a report that actually came out, I think today or yesterday, about the incentives for over 55s to sell up their family homes and to move into smaller units, I think this kind of resonates. I think this is kind of like what they're hinting at. People in Drumcondra who might be, you know, older residents should probably sell up and think about moving into our apartments. The reality of it is that, you know, in the past few days that I've been going around walking the streets of Drumcondra, dropping leaflets and talking to people, a lot of people have told me in no shy words, I will certainly not be moving from my house to move into those apartments. And I will certainly not be paying 1,300 euro a month for these ridiculously sized units. So especially because they're kind of asserting that over 55s are the ones who are, you know, supposed to be downsizing, I would, you know, almost ask from the designers of this scheme who are over 55, are you planning on moving into these apartment units that you've designed for Drumcondra? Or what's the deal here? Like, you have to be consistent with design. There has to be an ethical approach to what we produce.
And I think that this raises an interesting point about the kind of incoherence of government housing policy here, where on the one hand, there's these incentives that, oh, are you over 55? Well, clear up that house, we need it. Okay, you're going to give that person, firstly, 55, that just boggles my mind that it's what? So is that the age at which they think, okay, everyone's, you're an empty nester now, you can downsize, okay, great. But the incoherence that, you know, we're going to free up that home, say, for, you know, a family or whoever else with who needs a few extra bedrooms, okay, and where are these new apartments that people can buy? Because this is the biggest development in a century here. not a single apartment will be for sale. So if somebody is being incentivized to just sell to buy another one, and all that we're building is rental units, surely that's just going to have a knock-on effect where, you know, there's increased demand with no increased supply. So house prices are simply going to rise again.
And you have actually touched upon this already, but let's say that a lot of our neighbors who are over 55 sell their homes and move into this apartment. Who do you think is going to bid for these homes in Drumcondra? The same guys who are the same non-vulture funds who are investing in the rest of the city. They're going to buy up all the homes and then they're going to say, okay, we'll rent it to you at our rates. So ultimately, this is not, you know, we are trying to make sure that people understand that there needs to be public participation. We want people to understand that we are questioning design because we believe people deserve to live in better designed units. We need to have more generous design. We need to have built environments that are competitive. People who are claiming that we might be scaring off investors, who is going to want to live in Drumcondra, for example, if our entire neighborhood is full of these tiny units? They're going to say, oh, actually, you know, Drumcondra is that place where there's all these tiny apartments. We probably shouldn't live there. It's full of people who just come and go. So we're actually never going to get to meet our own neighbors. Like, we're actually playing a very dangerous game with the built fabric. We're transforming the whole thing without actually thinking about what the social life of our neighborhood is going to be in the future.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really, really important point. And just on that idea that, you know, we've got these investment funds and, you know, I've been highlighting it and writing about it for years, the danger of them and what, you know, how Ireland is on their map now and they are really targeting us big time. What do you guys think are the key ways, obviously, alongside, you know, doing something like this, objecting to a development in this way? What should the government be doing in terms of policy and stopping them, do you think?
Number one, we need to absolutely 100% ban build-to-rent as it is right now. Build-to-rent, the allowances for build-to-rent under SPPR 8, which is specific planning policy requirements of the apartment design guidelines, gives them a lot of leeway to produce these apartments, these units that are substandard, all of the things that we're talking about. So number one, I think that the government should ban build-to-rent as it is right now. There is a market for apartments to be built for people to rent them out. Sure, there is that market, but it can't be in the format that it is today. There has to be a maximum cap allowed for build-to-rent schemes. We can't, oh my God, we can't have 100% build-to-rent. Like, we are literally seeing it right here, 1,614 units, all of them only for rent. That is completely inappropriate. So if you do this, the government doesn't actually have to allocate any money or you know, policy changes to the entire operation. Actually, the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, in 2020 banned co-living housing. He got a report in September. He was recommended to do it ASAP. It took him a few months. And then on December 21st of 2020, co-living was de facto banned. What happens whenever you delay these decisions? On December 20th, an application for a massive co-living development was put into the planning department. So these decisions need to happen fast. That would be one thing that we could do quickly that doesn't require the government to spend loads of money or grab a bunch of land.
I think that's exactly the point. And that there are very simple things the government could do. They have repealed before as elements of the design standards for new apartments, which was, you know, I think it's SPP or
nine,
four or five or nine or ten or whatever that dealt with co-living. They can repeal the ones that remove build-to-rent. If the government is going to insist on having this build-to-rent sector, there is no justification for lower standards for build-to-rent apartments. On top of that, obviously, you know, our expertise is architecture, and so I'm not going to get into talking about stamp duty and things that other, you know, that other people are much, much, much more expert at discussing. But what I think we need, and the government has the remit for this through the Land Development Agency, is for a much heavier hand of the government in housing supply and to actually treat housing as housing. Fianna Fáil built much of the social housing in this state. Fianna Fáil used to build housing. They now have the opportunity to prove that once again, that's what their party stands for. If we want to encourage our Indigenous economy, we want to encourage our small and medium enterprises, the government needs to look at taking sites, coming up with master plans, even hiring professionals to come up with those master plans, then breaking them into small enough development sizes so that local and small architects, designers, design teams, and local or small medium builders can then tackle these without the need for going out shopping around to who's the biggest investment fund in the world and how many units are going to do. The other thing about this new approach, and there was a well-publicized study on this recently by John Dobbins, which I think you probably shared yourself on Twitter, was that this approach, we've done this before, this takes the nastiness out of the equation. And because of the change in scale, we're talking about a smaller scale to a medium, small to medium rise buildings, that's delivered much quicker. So I would say to anyone, that's saying, oh, if you object to this, you're going to slow down more housing. In the time that it would take from the grant of planning on this build to rent debacle, to when it's completed, because of the nature of the construction, there's plenty of time in there for the government to say, actually, hang on, there's a plan needs to go in place here. We'll do something like this that's, medium rise. We'll get it broken down into smaller areas. We can tackle it with multiple builders, multiple designers. And the scale means you can deliver that in the same time frame.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is absolutely an alternative. Just to finish up, I'm going to read some of the different words for vulture funds that people suggested from Twitter. There was some great ones in there. But just before I do, what did you make of Heinz emailing me and telling me that my tweet was libelous? And what did you think?
I think it just helps everybody realize they're showing their true colors. They understand exactly why we're talking about them, and they understand exactly why people might feel one way or the other about seeing their big posters around their neighborhoods. Nobody wants them. Nobody wants them. So they're like, oh, you know what, Rory, let's calm it down here. We don't want you talking about us too much. That's.
I think you might have spooked them. I think you probably know that yourself. So I think it's a good sign. I'm checking my inbox there. I've nothing yet. I tend to be very careful with these things. We know how to address an observation and everything else. And all I say is nothing that we've put out there about this scheme is untrue. Yeah. It's all there. It's in their own materials. We're just simply telling our community, informing our neighbors, hey, this is going on. And Alfonso's been knocking on a lot of doors. I've been sending a lot of emails. I've been leading the keyboard campaign more so. And the reaction that he's been getting that I've been hearing about is that so many people had no idea that this is entirely built to rent.
Yeah.
And the nature of that, the fact that you hear 1,600 apartments, you see the CGIs.
Yeah.
It's well hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well done. And listen, I'll read out some of those now because they're well worth a listen. And I know, Alfonso, you put in one there as well, which is good. So what I said was, had people any descriptors for global real estate funds who, of course, are not vulture funds, as Alfonso rightly called them, non-vulture funds, who bought up land in the cheap from NAMA and now are developing expensive micro-build rental units. So some suggestions, it was very interesting ones. A Varroa Destructor Fund, which is drawn from the savings industry, use the beehive as a symbol of how hard work and saving can help you become a homeowner. But like Varroa mites, these funds destroy that happy vision, causing colony collapse. They are a disease. I like that one. All right. Another one was Carrion Flocks. Alfonso's one now is well thought of. Non-vulture funds. I liked how you put it in the non. That's what we should call them now. Non-vulture funds love to mutate when new policies are introduced to profiteer from loopholes. You know who else does this? The Staphylococcus aureus bacteria, which causes the commonly known staph infection. They become resistant to antibiotics policy very quickly. And Michael said, invective description is not defamation. Someone else said, I'm going with vampire squid serpent funds. Piranha was another one, jackal funds, shark fund, soulless profiteering parasitic scumbags, speculative funds, feudalist funds, dung beetle fund, hyena fund, basically ad scavenger names followed by fund ad nauseum. Apologies to all of nature's scavengers for the association, as they actually do contribute. And of course, that reminds me, our former Minister for Finance, Michael Noonan, lauded the vulture funds for coming in here and playing, as he described, the important role that vultures do in the ecology, which is cleaning up the carcasses. An incredibly profound statement when you think about it, in terms of generation rent being the carcasses of austerity that vulture funds continue to and were brought to feed off by our government. Carrion chasers, as someone makes a point, making money for your shareholders often relies on reputation, hence the threat of legal action. Exploiter funds, renterist, slugs, mosquitoes, vacuum lords, termites, locust funds, and here we go now. Someone said a lot of these comparisons are to the animal kingdom. How about property funds that tear up the social contract, or funds that are investing in homelessness? Someone else came with Death Star funds, slimlords, not slumlords, Cromwellian cash buyers, property barons. We've already had beef barons and media barons. Mocha urbanism. Maybe you could explain that one, Alfonso. You could call them NVFs, not vulture funds. International Hoover funds, whatever's not been guarded will be sucked. Seagull funds, they swoop in and steal our chips. Only the chip shop owners benefit. Brave new overlords, asset managers. Parasite funds, global real estate fund greed. Colonists, SPIV, scavenging profiteering investment vehicles. Vulture, very unimportant litigious entity that loves unaffordable real estate. Vulture, I like that. There's lots more. Good ones there. What do you make of those?
I think one of them that resonated with me is just to say apologies to all the actual scavengers of nature. You know, nature doesn't have the isn't guilty of all this nastiness. They don't have the tools to actually take you to court and you know, make you go through a hard time. You know what? They're all very funny. They're all very well suited to these guys. And ultimately, they're not going to be living in Drumcondra. All these people who are making decisions in all these non-vulture funds, they don't care about what life in Ireland is like. They're just here to make money. So yeah. I would just invite people to make sure that their voices are heard, make sure that they understand where we're coming from. You know, you may criticize what we're saying in terms of scaring investors away or whatever, but ultimately we are actually trying to do this so that our friends and family and, you know, our future generations actually have really cool built environments to like, you know, walk around, to like, you know, check places out, to put their own business. Like, we have our own little studio in the front room of our house. I wish there was like cheap office units in this new development, so we could actually set up our own studio there.
Yeah, yeah. That's just Rob.
Just going back to your lovely list there of non-vulture funds, and you know what about Scotland? There was a nice few historical throwbacks, and I think that resonates with me. I would just call these guys absentee landlords. That's what we're signing ourselves up for. And by we, I mean that's what the government is signing ourselves up for, and the current government is following along with that. So I guess get informed. Take a look at the plans. Go online. Look at what's going on. Look around your neighborhood. If you're
going, what's the website again?
So the website was set up by a good friend of ours.
Don't know if we can say his name, so
no, don't. You might want to.
stop.holycross.college.
Great, great. Well, listen, well done for taking the initiative, and hopefully we will stop this in its current guise. And development, and actually get something which is built for people to buy and rent, and for proper social homes, affordable homes, and builds a community. But I really do think it has to be the start and the continuation of the ongoing movement, social movement that's needed to create livable, sustainable cities and homes for our people, which is what most basic need people have. So listen, Rob, Alfonso, thank you so much for joining me today on Reboot Republic.
Thanks again, Rory. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rory.
Thanks. And listeners, we really appreciate you taking the time out to listen. You can go back and listen on Spotify or wherever. Lots of podcasts back on issues of housing, housing shock, inequality, lots of things back there. And we please, if you can, support us to keep producing these podcasts. Go over to patreon.com/tortoisetrack. Sign up for whatever you can. These podcasts really are making a major contribution to the debate, to highlighting the issues. So if you can, please support us. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.